Well, in this part of Focus 580, we'll be touching on a topic, something that we have tried to do from time to time, and that is to talk about what's going on these days with the airline industry. And certainly we know that airlines are facing a lot of pressure, and you can see that when you read the business news find out just how much difficulty that airlines are having. For example, just last week, ATA Airlines, this was at one time the nation's 10th largest, filed for bankruptcy, and it was the second airline to file for Chapter 11 in the last month. And certainly no one expects these pressures, the kinds of pressures that exist on the airlines, to ease up anytime soon. And as a result, people who observe the industry say that consumers certainly should expect fewer flights. Those flights will be more crowded, and you shouldn't be surprised that fares will be going up. In this part of the show, we'll be talking about these continuing problems faced by the airlines and what it all means for the flying public. And our guest is David Field. He's been an aviation reporter since 1982. He is the America's editor of Airline Business, that is a London-based monthly magazine that covers airline economics and management worldwide. He covers safety, frequent flyer, and consumer issues, as well as labor and financial aspects of airlines and airports. He spent nearly two decades at major daily newspapers, including USA Today. He's a frequent guest on public radio and television and other media outlets, and he's joining us this morning by telephone. I'm pleased that you could give us some of his time. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, if you'd like to call in with questions, and toll-free 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. Mr. Field, hello.
Hi. Please call me David.
All right. Well, David, thanks very much for being on the show. We appreciate
it. My pleasure.
So anybody gone out of business yet today?
Well, I haven't looked at the wires for 10 minutes, but last time I looked, no one had shut down yet today.
All right. Good. Well, good news so far, but it isn't even noon yet, at least where we are. And, you know, one of the things I guess that surprised me was actually taking a look at all of the bad news that we see about airlines now. One of the things that apparently surprised me was that last year in 2007, most carriers were in the black.
Yeah, they were in the black, but nowhere near as much as they thought they would be at the beginning of 2007, and it was the first time in a couple of years that most airlines were in the black. Mm-hmm. For this year, we think some of the big airlines may make money, but the people who make those forecasts and predictions have already ratcheted down their predictions twice, so we're really not sure what's going to happen. Let me just point out one thing. You know, when we say the airlines are going to make money, we're talking globally. If you talk about the U.S., I just don't know. The analysts who follow these things closely have been ratcheting down their domestic forecasts over the last couple of weeks.
If you look at the various pressures that come to bear on the airlines, would the number one thing be the cost of fuel?
Right now, yes. You know, in past crises, sometimes we've had the number one thing being the cost of labor. But this crisis is different because you cannot negotiate with fuel. You can't negotiate with the fuel supplier or the guy at the pump or even with OPEC. It's become the single largest expense, which was an area that traditionally was given to labor. It's up to 40% of the operating expenses of some of the carriers. And the airlines have a particular problem. They don't pay what you and I pay at the pump. You and I pay, you know, when you and I see $108 a barrel, we know that we can divide it down into the gallons and get a rough idea. The airlines pay about $25 to $35 a barrel more for what's called the crack spread or the refining premium. Their fuel is refined differently, and they have to pay extra per barrel to pay for the refinery time to get their fuel into usable shape.
Maybe we could talk for a moment about ATA, the airline that filed for bankruptcy last week, and this was the second time in 3 years. Now they're facing the higher fuel costs just like everybody, but are there some special circumstances here that contributed to their filing for Chapter 11?
Very much so, and with each of these carriers that's shut down or said it's going to shut down, there are special events, special circumstances. But they do have in common the cost of fuel. ATA, which for old-timers out there was long known as American Transair, was based in Indianapolis, has been through an awful time over the last decade. They went into bankruptcy when their original plan to become a business-oriented low-fares carrier failed. largely because they were facing very, very stiff competition from carriers like Southwest, and because ATA, by its own admission, was not providing a particularly good product. They had a lot of problems with on-time service. They had a lot of problems with customer satisfaction. They went into bankruptcy. They were bought out by private equity and later became part of a holding company that also owned charter airlines and cargo airlines, but were operated independently. One of the really big problems that ATA had was they still faced a pretty bad reputation with a lot of flyers. The only way they could attract people was by offering lower fares than everyone else, because they were not an airline of choice. And as fuel went up and as competition steepened, offering low fares wasn't enough. They were underpricing themselves. Hmm. ATA also had a couple of problems. During its bankruptcy, it probably hadn't gotten enough costs out of its system. They were paying very high prices for their aircraft, their leased aircraft. And they were competing with Southwest, even though Southwest had helped bail them out of bankruptcy, even though Southwest signed a deal with them called a code share, which basically Southwest buys seats on ATA for its own frequent flyers. And ATA was running flights from the West Coast to Hawaii, and basically they were full of non-paying passengers who'd gotten on because they had a lot of frequent flyer points from Southwest. So, yeah, there were unique problems.
Hmm. What about the other airline? I didn't mention the name of the other airline, though, that's filed for bankruptcy now within the past couple of weeks, is Aloha.
Yeah.
What were their problems?
They have two things in common with ATA. One is the high price of fuel, and the other is they, too, had gone through a bankruptcy from New Year's Eve 2004 for about a year and a half, were taken out of bankruptcy. In fact, some of the capital came from the same people who took ATA out of bankruptcy. And later became privately held. Aloha was owned by a man named Ron Burkle, and his name should be familiar. He's a fabulously wealthy California supermarket billionaire and a good friend of the Clintons and a very smart businessman. And Mr. Burkle had put money into Aloha and sent out to Aloha some very experienced airline guys and a guy called Dave Banmiller, who is known in the industry as an airline doctor. You know, he goes around fixing broken airlines. And one of the problems is, during the bankruptcy, Aloha probably didn't get as much out of their costs as they could have. Certainly not enough to deal with the rising price of fuel and a unique competitive factor. There were two airlines in Hawaii, Aloha and the considerably larger airline, Hawaiian Airlines. And they could sort of compete with each other. But then a third player came in. It's a little airline called Go, which had four or five 50-seat regional jets. Go was a product of the Mesa Air Group, which also owned Air Midwest, a couple of other regional carriers. And what Mesa did was basically Mesa was able to undersell the two big carriers with its Go unit to price so aggressively and so attractively that both Hawaiian and Aloha began losing a lot of money on their local routes. There's a huge air market in Hawaii for people flying among the islands. Hawaiians love to visit family. They love to stay in touch. And you had a lot of local traffic. And part of the base of Aloha's traffic was Hawaiian expatriates, a lot of people who'd left the islands because there wasn't enough work and gone to Southern California and the San Francisco area and work there in high-tech and other areas. And Aloha at one point was filling planes with folks visiting relatives and going home. But that local market was eroded when this very, very low-cost, very, very low-fare player, Go, owned by Mesa, came in and was cutting fares down to the $19 level and the dollar level and so on. So Aloha couldn't make money locally on its intra-island routes, and then the cost of fuel made it impossible to make money on the long-distance routes to the mainland, particularly since you just can't raise fares fast enough to cover the cost of fuel.
Mm-hmm. Well, given that the airlines are facing these kinds of pressures, and we know that things have been tough for several years now, and in fact, some of the what were once major airlines, the things we call the legacy carriers. Actually, some of them are gone now, and almost all of them have been in Chapter 11 at least sometime over the last few years. Do we expect that we're going to see further consolidation and in future, for example, might we see, might we actually lose another legacy carrier? Or actually, what would happen is that they would probably have to merge with one of the other big companies. And these kinds of things have been discussed now going back at least 4 or 5 years, the possibility that, that something like that would happen.
I think it's very possible. The big question in my mind is whether or not there would be a major legacy carrier merger. You know, a few months back, most people expected Delta and Northwest to do a deal. Mm-hmm. They were very close to a deal, which would have been a humongous merger and would have created the largest domestic airline. The deal fell through over objections from the pilots. The pilots at both airlines could not reach an agreement. Labor is just an absolutely central, crucial factor in any kind of a merger. As fuel keeps going up, you're going to see pressure on people like Northwest to merge with someone else simply to get the economies of scale to pay for fuel and the economies of revenue generation, what they call the network factor, to bring in more revenue. You know, the assumption in the airline industry is that the bigger the network, the more you can keep people on your airline and keep them from having to transfer to anyone else because you offer so many destinations. That that network theory is that you'll get more money, enough more money, that you'll be able to afford the price of fuel or labor or whatever is the most pressing need right now. Whether or not that merger is going to happen soon is very much an open question. And to be honest, I think there's a real chance that we would see another failure before we would see a big merger. Hmm.
And is there any particular airline right now that stands out in your mind as being a candidate for failure sometime soon?
Yeah, and I'm reluctant to name them simply because they're good guys and they're doing the best. But a lot of people will tell you that Frontier out in Denver has a very tough road ahead of it.
Yeah.
It's a good airline, they're good guys, and they have an incredibly loyal following in the Denver area. But they're sort of caught in between. Southwest came into Denver in early 2007. Southwest comes in, it means everyone has to lower fares. The competition is real cutthroat. And also out in Denver you have United, which is an airline that can take people anywhere in the world. So Frontier is being squeezed from above and below. And I certainly don't want to spook travelers. It's a nice airline. They do a good job, and I certainly wish them the best of luck.
Our guest in this hour of Focus 580 is David Field. He is America's editor for Airline Business Magazine. That is a London-based monthly magazine that covers airline economics and management worldwide. He's been writing about the air industry for a long time, almost 20 years. He's written for major daily papers, including USA Today. And we're talking a little bit about where things stand now with the industry. We'll be talking about some other issues as well, things that will touch consumers as we head into the big travel season this summer. Also, perhaps talk a little bit about safety issues that have come up recently in hearings on Capitol Hill. First, though, we need to pause for a moment here to generate a little revenue ourselves. And Les Schulte is here with me in the studio. This is our spring fundraising effort. And just one of a couple of times here during the year that we sit down in front of the microphones like this and to and try to remind people just how important their financial support is to the station and to remind them that it's not just for us, it's also for you, because that money that you contribute turns right around and we put that back out to you in the form of programming. But to keep the programming on there, we need to hear from as many people as we possibly can.
That's right, David. Really, this is for the kinds of programs that you tell us you use and find valuable here on your public radio station. Because it's a public radio station, we need you to go to the phones and make that pledge and become a friend of WILL, a financial friend of WILL, and really you decide that amount. You know, you tell us that this station really touches your lives in many different ways, and I think this discussion you're having right now is important, because if you travel at all, if you have to go see family, if you go on those vacations and things, the things that are happening in the airlines right now are really important to us, because it's going to make a difference in the price of the tickets that we have to pay, the types of flights that we'll be able to take in the future. So if you find this particular discussion important, make a contribution right now. The number to call is 217-244-9455. you can go online to willpledge.org. It'll take somewhere between 90 seconds and 3 minutes. 90 seconds if you're really efficient, 3 minutes if you got the chats with our friendly phone volunteer and want to find out a little bit more maybe about the thank you gifts and things like that. But it really doesn't take very long, and it means so much as we're into the last couple of days of this spring drive. We're a little over $106,000. Thanks very much to the hundreds of people who have made that pledge. Right now, though, it's time for you to go to the phone, call 244-9455 or willpledge.org. Let us know that a good, strong, local public radio station is important to you right now.
Thank you very much, Les. Well, once again, let me just mention that our guest for this part of Focus 580 is David Field, America's editor of Airline Business Magazine. He's a journalist who's been covering the air industry for almost 20 years for a variety of publications, and we're pleased to have him spending some time with us. He does, obviously, a lot of interviews on these subjects. And if you have questions about air travel, you can give us a call, 333-9455, and also toll-free, 800-222-9455. Well, last week was not a particularly great week for the FAA. We had some hearings on Capitol Hill where people, members of Congress, heard from three people who were inspectors working for the FAA that testified that the agency let Southwest Airlines fly planes that weren't inspected, that the airlines knew they were flying planes that weren't inspected, that had cracks in them, that had something that had caused back in 1988 a very, very bad accident. And also these inspectors said, told the members of Congress, that their bosses at the FAA put pressure on them essentially to prevent them from doing their jobs. What is this all about?
It's a good question. You know, everyone loves Southwest, but these inspectors may have been carrying it too far. It raises very serious questions, and perhaps I shouldn't joke, it raises very serious questions about FAA oversight. You know, everyone knows Southwest is a good airline. That should not mean that it gets less critical scrutiny than a troubled airline or a new airline. And I watched this hearing. I watched it on the webcast because the Capitol Hill hearing room was so crowded I couldn't get in. It's absolutely fascinating because these whistleblowers were very clearly sincere people, real people. They weren't seeking publicity. They were real guys. And what really upset me was the way in which a senior FAA inspector had probably intimidated them, tried to intimidate them away from complaining about oversight, lack of oversight. That's scary. What I think puts this in common with our bankruptcies and failures is the airlines already face a crisis of confidence from the public. The public doesn't trust them. The public doesn't like them. The public thinks that fares are too high. And now you have this. If you have someone you don't trust being associated in the minds of travelers with someone who may well risk your life, it's very bad in terms of long-term public confidence, in terms of whether or not people are going to be buying airline travel when they're in that decision process. You know, right now, people are reluctant to buy airline travel because they think fares are high. They know gas is high, so they're saying, should I take the trip or should I stay home? And I wonder if worries about safety will have some sort of minimal, sort of subliminal psychological effect, and people say, no, I'm not going to pay this kind of fare and sit on the tarmac for 2 hours and have my bag lost, and at the same time, not really be confident that I'm going to be safe.
Yeah. Now, this, what I guess confuses me a little bit, is this particular hearing where they heard from these whistleblowers happened after the FAA fined Southwest over $10 million for the very things that they're talking about, for missing inspections and for continuing to fly the planes.
The only reason the hearing was delayed was that the chairman of the House Transportation Committee, Jim Oberstar, a Democrat from Minnesota, had very serious surgery. The hearing had originally been planned for early March. But, you know, I'm glad you raised the timing issue because the FAA proposed fine, which isn't final yet, was probably done by the FAA in response to Oberstar's announcement that he was going to have the hearing. And you got into this really a little bit shabby contest of, you know, who's more vigilant, the FAA or Congress. And you kept seeing the FAA doing things to take attention away from Congress. And I'm not really sure that's the best use of resources when you have something as serious as aviation safety and public confidence at issue.
Yeah. The other thing that certainly would make me concerned, and I would imagine make other people concerned about this too, is that even before these recent hearings, in March, at least three that I know of, at least three big airlines, United, American, and Delta, all canceled flights, large numbers of flights, so they could conduct safety inspections of the planes, which makes you think that this is not just a problem. If there is a problem, it's not just a problem limited to Southwest. This may be a problem across the industry.
Yes, indeed. And one of the reasons why these three big carriers plus a couple of smaller carriers put planes in the hangar was in response to a new series of FAA inspections that were ironically announced just about the time the House hearing was announced. But I think the carriers put planes on the ground and stranded passengers in a very, very clear, deliberate move to try to restore public confidence. What they were saying was safety is more important to us than convenience, that safety is paramount, and the reason why we're putting all these MD-80s in the garage, as Delta and American did, was to double-check to make sure that a certain maintenance practice had been done correctly. I hasten to add that the reality is, I think, somewhat different from the public perception here in that the mechanical issues that were on the table here were relatively minor, and I've been assured by people who know that none of them was an immediate threat to safety. With American and Delta, it was a question of wiring and whether or not wire clips and retainers were an inch apart or an inch and a half apart.
Hmm.
So, you know, we're in a period of really excellent airline safety. We have been for some time. And I don't think that people should worry about there being real safety risks. On the other hand, look at the impact that these groundings had. You know, Delta put something like 30 airplanes into the hangar for a day or two, and you had thousands of people stranded. And it tells you something about how tightly stretched the system is.
Yeah.
And it also suggests something about what we may face this summer. Let's say there's another maintenance issue that comes up, and planes are, you know, 95% full. What happens with just one or two airplanes being put in the hangar? And I think that we're going to see inconvenience of that sort this summer.
Yeah. Just to underscore a point that you made, and I think it's probably a good point to make, that it is true that the safety record of the airlines has recently been quite good. In fact, according to the one story that I looked at here, 2007 was one of the safest years in aviation history. It had the lowest number of crashes in more than 40 years. So that at least is to me is somewhat encouraging.
Oh yeah, very much so. But you know, bear in mind that one of the factors driving safety is the age of the fleet. And as fuel keeps getting more expensive, you will see more older airplanes being put in the hangar or put in storage. So there's almost an upside.
Yeah.
But again, the system is so stretched, so taut, planes are so full that I'm much more worried about delays and congestion than any other issue coming up this summer.
All right. We have a couple of callers here. We'll bring them right into the conversation just very quickly as we're at our midpoint. I'd like to introduce again our guest, David Field. He's the America's editor for Airline Business Magazine. That is a monthly magazine that's based in London that covers airline economics and management worldwide. He writes about a number of issues, including safety, frequent flyer and consumer issues, also labor and financial aspects, and has been a journalist specializing in covering the airline industry for almost 20 years. He wrote for a number of major dailies, including USA Today. Questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. We have caller in Urbana to start with here, line one. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
My question is in regards to the fact that is any research being done to find alternative energy sources for travel? Because I hear that the biggest complaint is fuel prices. Or is it that the cost of replacing a fleet would be so much that this isn't really an issue being pursued by Airbus or Boeing or any other companies that manufacture airplanes?
That's a good question, and the answer I'm very pleased to say is yes. There is serious research going on, both by Airbus and Boeing, by some of the airlines, and by the FAA. Virgin Atlantic, which is privately held by the British billionaire Richard Branson, actually did a test flight. It was a specially equipped 747 that had an engine on that burned a biofuel that had been developed in England. And we've seen other developments in biofuel. Whether or not they will become practical replacements is very much an open question. A couple of reasons. One is we need a lot more research. And two is there is, unfortunately, I think, a mindset among a lot of airline people that the price of fuel will go back down, that this is just a temporary crisis, and that we don't have to deal with it. And I deplore that mindset simply because we have to deal with it. Even if fuel goes down, I think we have to start thinking about environmental impacts. And I think that governments are going to force us to think about environmental impacts. As you probably know, the Europeans are very aggressive, the European community, about cutting down on aircraft emissions, even though they're a relatively small contributor to the overall pollution problem. The Europeans are not only aggressive in their own territory, but they're pushing the U.S. to get involved in a carbon trading scheme and also in a not just in the offset scheme, but also in a emissions limitation program.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Let's go to Batavia for another caller. This is our line four. Hello.
Yeah, good morning. You know what? I happen to know a gentleman who's one of the second-in-command FAA air traffic controllers out at O'Hare. And from what I've been hearing from him and what people have been hearing from the media on TV, basically two different entities, it is a serious problem. They're overtaxed. Not just the amount of people, it's the amount of planes flying one time. On top of, just from my past experience, in the last couple of years, I've had to go back and forth half a dozen times to different states. And flying in a plane, to me, I almost think it's going to drop out of the sky. They get awful close. And I've seen tapes of this, these situations where they just come way too close. I actually think the airline industry is in a big trouble. I think people are going to start realizing how unsafe they are, because I really don't. I've flown in planes. I'm telling you, I'm surprised we made it from one end of the country to the other. Things falling apart, smoke, constantly things, rattling. It was terrible. The seat I was in basically wasn't even, they tell you to, pull your seat back. You can't even do that because it's broken, so you're flying with your seat back all the time. The seatbelts don't work. And I don't want to pick on one individual or, airline, but they're all like that. We have yet to see what exactly the study that was taken up by Michael Griffin and NASA. I really honestly do feel that the airline industry has got to limit the amount of flights in and out for people to fly.
Well, the caller raised a number of good questions, Dave, and let's talk about the air traffic control system just as one, because not only does that perhaps pose safety issues, but people complain a good deal about flights being late in taking off and arriving, and that's an issue there as well.
Very much so. I got to point out that any time you talk about air traffic control, you have to bear in mind the larger context, which is that the Union for Air Traffic Controllers, NATCA, National Association for Air Traffic Controllers, which does not have the right to strike, I would point out, is very, very vocal about what it feels are problems of understaffing and fatigue at major airport towers like O'Hare and indeed at smaller airports. You have to bear in mind that NATCA, the Traffic Controllers Union, and the FAA are involved in a long-running contract dispute. There have been serious charges made by NATCA for about 2 years now. They're treading a very thin line between telling people it's unsafe and pointing the finger at the FAA And I'm not enough of an expert to tell you what the facts are, what the absolute truth is, except to say, yes, the system is strained, and yes, I think fatigue is an issue. Whether or not that makes it objectively and measurably less safe is a question for people smarter than me.
Mm-hmm.
But the caller did make the distinction between safety and convenience. And again, because the system is stretched the way it is, because the traffic controllers are understaffed, fatigued, or are not acting with full enthusiasm, or both, we'll see more and more delays as the summer comes along and as we have more flights added. From my perspective, I'm sort of happy sitting on the ground because I know that means someone is putting safety ahead of convenience, but it is an outright and tragic shame that we have to come to that dichotomy. You know, what do we do? Do we be safe or do we be convenient? Well, there's a larger issue also involved, and that's modernization of the FAA and of air traffic control technology. There is technology that's going to be able to make it a lot smarter. Satellite-based technology using the GPS system, using a lot of smart electronics within the airliner itself, rather than our current system, which is basically the way it was in the 50s and 60s. Lots of radars and lots of radios and constant supervision by the traffic controllers over everything the airliner does, even though the person giving the supervision, the traffic controller, does not always have full, immediate, up-to-date information, even though the guy in the cockpit can have full and immediate, up-to-date information. I'm not suggesting that the future involves cutting out the air traffic controllers. All I'm saying is that there's a lot more we can do to move it away from a command and control system with a 1970s mentality and get into more efficient and creative routings, techniques, use of airspace, which not only would create more efficiency, but would address the problem of emissions and pollution. Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea how much fuel is wasted, how many emissions are wasted by airplanes sitting on the ground running the engines, or airplanes flying in circles, or airplanes doing what the FAA has done for years, which is to make a straight line between two points and fly that line, even if there's a more efficient routing?
We are headed into about our last 15 minutes here in this part of Focus 580, talking about the current situation in the airline business. Our guest is Dave Field. He's a journalist who's been writing about airlines for a long time. We'll talk some more in just a moment here, particularly talk about the kinds of conditions that consumers are likely to face as we head into the summer, which is, of course, the biggest air travel time of the year. One more time here, we want to also make the pitch to people who are listening that your support is extremely important here for WILL. One of the things that we've tried to do, and this is certainly in response to listeners, is make our fundraising times shorter. And we have done that. That doesn't mean we have to raise less money, but we've made the time shorter. And in fact, we had planned that we would be spending most of the day tomorrow asking for people there for their support. And something has come up here. We have decided that we're going to take some of the day tomorrow so that we can bring people gavel to gavel live coverage of hearings on Capitol Hill. This is the Senate, in the Senate. And giving testimony will be the commander of the military in Iraq, General David Petraeus, and Ambassador Crocker, who is the U.S. ambassador to Iraq. We felt that this was a very important story, and we are a very important point here, and decided that we wanted to bring this to listeners. Now, that means that for several hours during the middle of the day, we'll have this on tomorrow, and we'll not be able to ask for people's support. So that means it's even more important that in the time that we have, that we hear from as many people as possible. So, again, if you're a listener to WILL, this station needs your support, and you could help us out right now by giving us a call and making a pledge. And Les Schulte is here, stepped into the studio again to spend a couple minutes with us.
Thanks, David. You're absolutely right. That's why we need people right now to not put it off any longer and make that call at 244-9455. And, really, what makes an AM 580 listener, Focus 580 listener, become a contributor to these stations? Well, we think one of the reasons is a sense of social responsibility. If you're getting something out of this interview right now, and I know there are, you know, there are callers waiting on the line, people who have been finding this interview fascinating, been and I'm one of them, I've been listening back in my office. I'm going, oh no, don't tell me Southwest. I fly Southwest all the time. My in-laws are out in Phoenix. My kids are all over the country because for some reason or other they don't want to live under the influence of mom and dad anymore. That's probably another story. Anyway, you know, but so airline travel is important. It's important to me, and I know it's important to most people as you begin your summer plans and have to see family and those types of things. So I find this interview very valuable. If you do too, we're asking you now to put a little something back into this station, a few dollars. A dollar a week, a $52 a year contribution, maybe a $104 a year contribution, and call right now at 217-244-9455. That's what public radio is all about, and that's how it's funded primarily by you, the listeners, people who get something out of their public radio station, the information that they find valuable, and put something back in right now at 244-9455, or you can do it online at willpledge.org.
All right. Thanks, Les. Again, our guest this hour of Focus 580 is David Field. He's America's editor for Airline Business Magazine. He's been aviation reporter since 1982. This magazine is based in London. It's takes a look at airline economics and management worldwide. Otherwise, our guest has been covering airlines for a long time. He spent nearly two decades at major dailies, including USA Today. And questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. Well, the last caller that we had, I'm sure that many people would echo his comments about what it's like to fly. No surprise here. Just recently, I come across a story that says that complaints, consumer complaints, are up 60%. So obviously, there are a lot of things that people find to complain about, that the planes are not comfortable, they're cramped, they're late getting off the ground, they're late arriving, fares keep going up. Now we're heading into the biggest travel time of the year will be in the summer. Last year, certainly, people found a lot of things to complain about. Even the president eventually got around to commenting on it. What do you think that this summer is going to be like?
It's going to be like last summer, only worse.
How encouraging.
No, the only hope for relief this summer is, and this is slightly perverse, if the economy keeps stumbling, if the recession really gobbles up people's confidence, you might have slightly fewer people flying. Hmm. But no, I don't think it's going to be a pleasant summer. We've done almost nothing in terms of relieving congestion. You know, the president got involved right around Thanksgiving last year. He announced a plan to let airlines use military airspace over the Thanksgiving and Christmas holidays, and it helped a heck of a lot. Why can't we do that year-round? He also announced a plan for changing some of the rules at the three big New York City airports, which are the most congested in the nation. That's only a temporary fix. You've got congestion everywhere, and Chicago here has incredible problems simply because everyone flies there and the airspace is designed the way it is. You know, if you want to go to an airport where there's no congestion, you're going to have to go to an airport where there are no flights. And that doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense. And one of the problems, and this is admittedly a Washington insider story, is the delay in getting a new FAA bill out of Congress. The bill would not just provide, you know, regular money for airport expansion and so on, but it would spur the FAA into buying this new air traffic control technology that we were talking about in the last segment, the satellite-based technology. And it would spur the airlines into equipping their airplanes with the absolute latest in satellite technology. Mm-hmm. It's been bogged down for 6 or 8, 9 months now over who pays and how much. Basically, there's a big fight between the airlines and private aviation, that's executive jets and so on, over who pays and whether or not the ticket tax goes up. And all this other minutia that's fascinating and important, but as long as we delay, we're not going to have any movement.
Well, we were talking earlier about the biggest challenge that the airlines face, and that is fuel prices. I think that I read somewhere that essentially in the last year they've doubled.
It's a little bit over a slightly longer term, it's doubled, but yeah.
But it's essentially over a little more of the year, it's doubled.
Yeah.
So certainly one thing would you say that people should expect, and that is that the ticket prices are going to go up?
Yes, although every time you say ticket prices are going to go up, someone comes out with a fare increase and it falls through. As long as there is a competitor who has lower costs and can offer a lower fare, that brings down fares throughout the industry. For many years, Southwest did this to the entire industry. That big guys, you know, Delta, American, United, would try a fare increase, and Southwest would say, no, we're going to be cheaper. That formula is starting to change because of fuel, that there are relatively limited numbers of cutthroat competitors. We had this operation out in Hawaii, I mentioned, that was willing to sell, you know, $19 tickets. We had an airline out in Columbus, Ohio, called Skybus, that shut down over the weekend, and they were selling seats on every flight, 10 seats on every flight at $10, mm-hmm. and a lot of $29 fares. And that kept fares down, both on the routes that Skybus was on, and indeed throughout the region that Skybus flew in. Skybus shut down, as I say, because they couldn't afford the price of fuel. But, yeah, I think probably we'll see higher fares. Even if you still see a lot of bargains, and you will, you'll see fewer seats at the bargain prices, and overall you'll see fewer flights. Airlines like Northwest, late last week, announced it was redoing its schedules. Delta, about a month ago, said it was redoing its schedules. That if you're on a trip, yeah, there'll be a 7 a.m. flight, but there may not be a 9 a.m. flight. The next flight might not be till noon, or the last flight out might not be at 9 p.m., it might be at 6 p.m., trimming wherever they can, making every flight pay its own way, and making every seat pay its own way. So, yeah, prices are going to go up.
I don't fly a lot, but it seems to me my experience is that most of the planes that I have flown have been almost full, or at least they've been pretty close to being full. And I was really surprised that to learn that in just last year, the flights were at, now this was up, they were just the last year, they were at 76% capacity, and that compared with 60%. Apparently 10 years ago in 1997, they were only flying a little bit over half full, and now they're at 76%. Seems to me like whenever I fly, most of the seats are full.
Oh, yeah, I have not seen very many empty seats in the last couple of months, and there are some airlines that have had higher load factors. The percentage of seats filled is called a load factor. It's a wonderful piece of industry jargon. But, there was a 90% domestic load factor reported by United over the summer. And that means that, you know, every U.S. flight was 90%. Every U.S. flight added up to 90% full. And what that means is that most of the flights during regular hours are 100%. And it gets down to 90% simply because there are going to be some flights at weird hours that don't have every seat filled.
Yeah.
And not only are planes more full, but if you just measure the cost to you and me, the consumer cost, it's up by any measure.
Well, one of the things that apparently airlines are also doing to try to help with their costs is that they're the various, in addition to the ticket price that they charge, the various fees for special things that they charge are going up. And now apparently there are at least two that I know of, airlines that have said on check luggage,
right,
your first check bag comes with the price of the ticket, and then they'll start charging extra for a second and a third and however many check bags you have. And United's going to do it. Northwest is going to do it. And maybe eventually, do you think everybody's going to do that?
Oh, yeah, because there are two others that have said recently.
Okay.
U.S. Airways, and then Delta is also doing it. Although I want to point out that if you're a member of the elite frequent flyer program, the super gold, extra royal, platinum, whatever, you don't have to pay the second bag fee. But you're seeing it for a lot of things. Northwest has begun charging you extra if you want to have the exit row seat where you get more leg room. Mm-hmm. On a lot of domestic flights, Northwest will charge you extra if you want to sit on the aisle. And other airlines are looking at this sort of ancillary revenue, as we call it, charging extras for these various things. Personally, I think it's an interesting idea in that, if they charged everyone extra, it would be a fare increase. This way, you give a certain level of choice to people that you know, if you're a bargain hunter like you and me, you're going to go for the lowest fare and be content to sit between two fat guys in the back and not buy a meal. If you're a person who's the way I'd love to be, and I'm sure you'd love to be, yeah, you'll pay extra to sit on an aisle seat, and you'll spend the $8 or $12 for the meal. But at least you have the choice rather than being faced with the Hobsonian choice of the fare is $900, take it or leave it.
Yeah. How much differential pricing is there? That is people paying more for the flights that go at the more desirable times, which I suppose would be basically around the middle of the day, and paying a little less if you're willing to fly either earlier in the morning or late at night.
It's a good question, and I don't know of any studies that have come out with differences on time of day pricing, but you do see an enormous difference between premium travel and El Cheapo travel. And that distance is increasing. They call it the delta, the differential. Between the front of the airplane and the back of the airplane, there is certainly a greater differential than there has ever been before. And there, you look at that two ways. One is that fares are higher for the first-class people. The other way, the sort of optimistic way, is fares are lower for us cheap guys in the cheap seats.
Well, I don't. I personally don't know how people afford to go first class. It's one time in my life, because I was bumped, I ended up sitting in first class, and it did feel like the ultra royal, glorious, golden, which, you know, whatever level treatment. And I may never in my life again experience that. But in addition to the fact that the attendant seemed very solicitous, the seating was remarkably spacious, and it seems that as I fly more and more, I don't know if it's me, the seats seem to me that they're getting smaller. Maybe they're not, but they certainly, and the planes are getting smaller, so I guess that would, and if they're trying to get in as many people in as possible, it would make sense that, yes, the seating would be pretty tight.
So I think the seats were made by the same people who made my dinner jacket. Because every year it gets smaller.
Very strange.
No, actually, airplanes are getting a little bit more crowded. Seat density, as they call it, is increasing in that the seats themselves are thinner than they used to be. Seats back in coach are thinner than they used to be. A lot of it is to save weight. I would point out that in a lot of cases, the smaller, thinner seats are not uncomfortable in that they have some new technology for back rubs and backrests and so on. But another trend that we're seeing is very high-density seating for the lowest fares. And on airlines like JetBlue, you pay a little bit more, you get more legroom. And again, it comes back to the choice. And I'm willing to pay it if the price differential isn't outrageous. United has been doing this for about 2 years, something they call Economy Plus. I flew cross-country. I flew from Washington to Vancouver, Canada, and it cost me $50 or $60 more, and it was worth it. And if there are travelers out there listening, just spend a lot of time on the Internet. Pay close attention to what the airline or the travel agent says to you over the Internet in terms of, do you want to buy up, do you want to buy this? And look, I love travel agents. They are great people. But travel agents want to sell you big international trips and cruises. If you just want to fly from Bloomington to St. Louis to Tampa, the best thing to do is go on the Internet yourself and do your search.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you very much for spending some time with us. We appreciate it.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.
David Field, he's America's editor of Airline Business Magazine. That is a London-based monthly that looks at airline economics and management worldwide. He's been spending time, a lot of time, over the last 20 years or so covering the airline industry, and we appreciate him spending some time with us.